When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it is Trags Mike Petralia back with the latest episode of the Jungle War podcast powered by CLNS Media, Prize Picks, and Game Time. Back with me here on the Jungle War pod this week is the one and only Paul Daner Jr. of The Athletic, doing a phenomenal job and a uniquely great job. How's that? Covering the Cincinnati Bengals and the National Football League. How you doing, Paul?
I always look forward to find out what this time's superlatives are going to be that you've decided to float my way at the beginning. I always appreciate
always it. Have to pump up the tires, pump up those tires before the pod
keep
begins.
Feeling good. I love it.
Get my guests feeling good. And speaking of feeling good, boy, was I in a great mood here. Actually, just monitoring Twitter or X. For the highlights of the Tom Brady roast on Netflix on Sunday night, I will tell you, having perused all of the clips that I could get my hands on or my eyes and ears on over social media over the last 12 hours, I will tell you that my highlights were Julian Edelman roasting Bill Belichick. To me, that was gold, and I'll tell you why. I don't know if you knew this, but yes, the old joke, I did cover the Patriots. The reason that was so much gold to me was because everybody who was around Edelman and Brady and that whole vibe with Bill Belichick knew they wanted to rip them 10, 15 years ago, but couldn't. Last night was their opportunity, and I think they hit the target. The bit about not being able to find a job was perfect. And I thought Bill handled that well.
Yeah. I mean, everybody kind of had some skeletons in their closet, which I enjoyed. I mean, it was like everybody that was up there had some stuff that hasn't been talked about much or needed to be talked about more, or is just in kind of a precarious situation. So between Belichick and, of course, there was like Robert Kraft took some shots, and Brady obviously took a million, and everybody kind of had their own little thing. So I enjoy all of it, you know.
Was there one that stuck out to you? Like one highlight that you'll take with you?
I didn't cover the Patriots, Trag, so I'm not personally invested.
Hey, this goes beyond. Let me jump in there because it's my podcast, and damn it, I'm going to say this for the record. This wasn't just about the Patriots. It was about maybe the most iconic figure in NFL history getting roasted and sitting there for an hour, hour and a half, whatever it was, and taking it. It was much more than just a Patriots roast, though many of the central figures obviously were Patriots.
Yeah, I like watching Tom Brady get taken down as much as the next guy. There were a few moments there where you're like, why did he decide to do this? I wonder if he's trying to – I feel like as he's going into this next phase of TV with his life, he's trying to show that he can laugh at himself a little bit, because I don't know that he's ever come off that way before as much. And now he's clearly trying to lighten his own persona and become a more approachable, less mythical figure maybe, and being torn down by his friends was part of the way that that could happen, I guess. But – yeah, there's a lot to take in there to me of like, why is he doing this? Why is he deciding to subject himself to this?
Yes. Well, with that being said, let's segue into a modern day quarterback that actually Bengal fans do care about and why we have the Jungle War pod. And that is to talk about all things Joe Burrow. And Paul, I think we're going to see Joe Burrow throw a football this week. Stop.
Potentially. It could happen. We might see Joe Burrow throw a football tomorrow.
Yeah, if he does, so what? That's the big question.
Yeah, I don't expect there to be any surprises. I've had the same opinion on the Burrow injury rehab process the entire time, and that is, I think we all should have learned from last year, in that just because somebody is out there does not mean that you have made it to the finish line. And this thing is a long way to go. Everybody wants to get excited and talk about how he's on pace for this and we're going to see him throw and it'll probably look fine. I want to see what it looks like in August as you get into those dog days of training camp. How, if he's talking about technique needing to be changed or altered in his throwing motion, if he feels like if you're seeing that same zip on those 20 yard outs, the hard throws, if his accuracy is still adjusting to whatever from the wrist. But I just think that's something that if it makes it all the way back to 100% or if it makes it to 95% and there's a little bit of difference there, I just feel like that's more the most interesting part of this injury rehab than this, which is expected that, sure, yeah, he'll be out there. We'll see him throw. It'll probably all look fine and whoop-de-doo. I'm a little more interested in what it's going to look like over the long haul when it gets closer to the season than it's what it's going to look like and what I expect to be pretty easy on-air off-season practices.
And what does the wrist feel like to Burrow after he does this for 2 or 3 weeks straight, or even, hell, 7 days straight or 6 days, whatever it is? When he starts repeating this over a short window of time, how does the wrist respond? Because, you know, we've heard this through rehabs across all sports. Sometimes you can be going along great, and we heard this obviously with the ACL, you can have setbacks. And you take 2 steps forward to take 1 step back. Is that what this is going to be like with the rest? And I'm sure that's what a lot of fans, that's what we, I think, in the media are very curious to see. How will the wrist respond over a matter of time?
Yeah, I mean, the impression that I get about this, when you talk to people that understand what it is, first of all, because it's kind of unprecedented a little bit with a quarterback at this level coming back from this, there's a little bit of just shroud of secrecy almost to it, of not, nobody's totally sure, but is that it's just going to be about getting all the way back that extra 5-10%. Is it 100% of what it was before, or his wrist always going to kind of be 90-95% of what it was before, and you have to adjust in certain ways? Like, to me, that's kind of the way it's been put forth to me about how this is going to play out and what it should look like in the end. And so to me, that's the time of year, you know, where it's like, okay, no, there's no longer structural issues. There's everything looks great and it's all healthy. Why do you feel that at that point that you're not throwing it 100% the way that you thought you were, or you're making little adjustments? Or, man, Burrow is ripping it in camp. Everything looks awesome. He looks exactly like the same guy. I think those are which of those is happening in August is what I'm looking for.
Hey, it's Trags, Mike Petralia, host of the Code Reds podcast and Jungle Roar podcast on the CLNS Media Network. What a great time of year to be a basketball fan. The NBA playoffs finally here and in full swing. I watch them every single night, but you know what's better than watching those playoff games on TV? Actually taking in all the fun and excitement in person. What's the best way to do that? Well, Game Time is my go-to. Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and, yes, easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to tip-off. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, how about this, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes all of the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets. Myself, I'm thinking of going up I-74 to take in an Indiana Pacers playoff game. Couldn't be easier with Game Time. They've got last minute deals, save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, but also concerts, comedy, and theater. With Game Time's ticket coverage, your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, Redeem code CLNS for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
All right. Until we see Joe Burrow on the field, we'll just have to wait to pass judgment on that. In terms of looking back on the draft and what the Bengals were able to do, I thought this draft is not necessarily measured on the potential of the draft picks, but the boxes that were checked and the needs that the Bengals needed to meet. From that perspective, and this is what I wrote for CLNSCincy.com, from that perspective, I gave them relatively high marks. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did what they wanted to do. They looked like they had a pretty calculated approach of seeing, of understanding what the draft was going to be. Mm-hmm. And that meant, you know, the obvious at the top that we spent all that time talking about, this draft is going to be one where they're going to get a prospect that is not normally around at 18 by going offensive tackle in a deep offensive tackle draft when there's six quarterbacks taken at the top. Amarius Mims doesn't make it to 18 in any normal year, just because of the nature of those two things that I said. And they were there with a position of need and a profile they love to take advantage of that. You know, same thing with what they were able to do at receiver. You know, I think they felt like all that depth at receiver hit them just right there at the 80th pick with Jermaine Burton. And they went, and you're right, and they hit the two defensive tackles. They needed the big guy, the run stopper, and then they needed Chris Jenkins. I mean, to get those two as a combo, we talked about how that was really the error of free agency for them, was they weren't able to properly address that as DJ Reader went out the door, and it put them in a corner a little bit in this draft of they really had to go and hit the defensive tackle room hard in a draft that was thin in that regard. Well, to have done that with two guys that they really like, Jenkins specifically falling to them at 49, I think was the win of this draft from a 2024 Bengals perspective, because they really needed that, and they need those guys to come in and be pretty key contributors immediately.
Yeah, and I find that perhaps the steal of the draft could be Jermaine Burton, because when you hear Zach Taylor talk in terms of taking the top off the defense, that is something that I think they really haven't. They have it in Jamar, but I think you get the sense that they felt they needed one more guy, a burner, to pair with Jamar and allow T to run his intermediate and complementary routes. They hadn't had that in the past, and now they do.
I remember after the Houston game, or in the lead up to the Houston game, around that, talking with them about Houston's offense and how much you felt their speed and their burst that they had with those receivers and guys like Tank Dell and what they were bringing from different spots on the field. And it was notable that they didn't really have that in the same way as Houston did it with certain positions, and slot being the most notable. I mean, Tyler Boyd is a very different type of slot player, third complementary weapon, then you're going to see Jermaine Burton be, or even some of the other guys be. And I think that there was a part of the moment where it was like, God, they want more of that. They want to feel a little bit more like that. They're really threatening teams more with speed and explosiveness at every spot out of their receiver core. And that allows them to highlight the things that the other ones do more. And Burton does all of that and then some. And so I think, yeah, the potential of what he can be is enticing. And there's a reason that Zach Taylor was doing this to his chair and so excited because he knows that. He knows what they're doing right on the field if this thing comes together. And if it does, it can be the perfect answer that they've kind of been thinking about for a long time in how the receiving group is constructed.
You recall, and I think you will recall this, when Zach Taylor spoke to us before that Houston game last year, it was almost like he was a bit envious of what Houston had. And he said, this team is going to be good, real good. And that was before C.J. Stroud had really come into his own. He had certainly had a couple of games in a row where he was opening eyes around the NFL, no question about that. But you could tell, you could sense in Zach Taylor's voice that there was envy about what Houston was able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and that was part of, it was partially Tank Dell, but it was partially, you know, what Nico Collins, what their, all of their receivers had kind of become, and how Stroud was able to utilize those and more of the aggressiveness and throwing the ball down the field. And this team just didn't have that. They were envious of every team finding explosives last year because they just didn't. And you've seen that be their targeted approach throughout every single milepost of the offseason, whether we're talking about the early portion, whether you're talking about free agency, whether you're talking about the draft on offense and then on defense in lessening them, but on offense specifically, it's been about finding more of those. It's been about finding explosives, right, and being that team again, the 2021 team that was just, you know, they were, you know, there's a lot of talk about all the go balls, but they were throwing it. They were pushing it down the field more. They were finding those spots. Teams have tried to not allow them to. Well, they have to take the next level and be creative in how to continue to make those happen. And so I think they've tried to figure out their ways. I mean, it's Zach Moss and Chase Brown versus Joe Mixon. It's Jermaine Burton versus Tyler Boyd. It's the things they've done with protection and being able, guys that can go out there on an island so you can send everybody out in the route more often. It's Mike Gesicki who can allow you to throw the ball down the field out of the tight end position, which they just have just not done really.
Same route.
It's possible, right? They're allowed to. They've never really done it to the tight end position, and he could give you a big slot. I mean, they've every move they have made has been players capable of creating further down the field and giving you more explosives. And the only one we haven't seen yet, Trags, to tag this conversation, is the new implementation of Ja'Marr Chase. And I expect that to be one of the biggest components of them finding explosives. And that's them finding more creative ways to use him and more like Justin Jefferson in Minnesota and get him involved in those intermediate to deeper levels more often and not just strictly, you know, working in the way that you've seen him, which he's been plenty explosive, but there's a lot more on the bone, I think, schematically with how they're set up now to take advantage of Chase's skill set.
Hey, it's Trags, Mike Petralia, host of the Code Reds podcast and Jungle Roar podcast on the CLNS Media Network. What a great time of year to be a basketball fan. The NBA playoffs finally here and in full swing. I watch them every single night, but you know what's better than watching those playoff games on TV? Actually taking in all the fun and excitement in person. What's the best way to do that? Well, Game Time is my go-to. Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and, yes, easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to tip-off. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, how about this, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes all of the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets. Myself, I'm thinking of going up I-74 to take in an Indiana Pacers playoff game. Couldn't be easier with Game Time. They've got last-minute deals. Save up to 60% off buying last-minute for sports, but also concerts, comedy, and theater. With Game Time's ticket coverage, your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem code CLNS for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Here's the way I look at the way the Bengals are structured offensively, and ideally what the way I think Zach Taylor would like it. There's a lot of intricate routes underneath, short and intermediate. The point of having guys that can take the top off is you free up space underneath so that Joe Burrow can pick out intricate routes. And if they're not there, you know, if the top route, you know, the high little deep route is not there, he can come back, bring his eyes underneath, and there will be better route runners underneath. And those better route runners really are, you know, Ja'Marr and T, but if you have a guy like Burton, Jermaine Burton, who can get deep, it just makes that offense click that much more. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the way Zach views the offense, at least the passing game offense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to be able to feel like you're threatening every blade of grass out there. And also, you know, a little more speed to run away from players on those underneath crossers, where you see them go across, and if the corner's trailing, like, you want them leaving, not hanging close. And you can run those intermediate overs, right, that we've seen that were kind of a Rams staple off the wide zone stuff. You would see a lot of those, and they've gotten away from that because of the way their offense has evolved. But I think they can do more of that type of stuff. And then if you just have injuries, you just, a guy like Burton gives them a little bit more. If T's out, you can play him outside. If you need him to play in the slot, he could be your slot guy. I just feel like they're able to cover different areas and create different sub packages with the groups that they have now that can be, you know, really helpful and allow them to find a lot more in the passing game.
You have a piece up on The Athletic, actually out today, Monday, and I find it fascinating. Whenever, in any sport, when writers talk to scouts, to me, that's where the fan really gets informed about what moves are made and why. And Steve Radicevich is the director of pro scouting for the Bengals. You talked to him. Of course, we heard from Mike Potts, a director of college scouting, a couple of days before the draft, because unfortunately, of course, you know, Duke Tobin lost his father, Bill Tobin, about a week before the draft actually took place. So we did hear from Mike Potts. Explain to the audience, if you will, Paul, the difference between what a director of college scouting and Mike Potts does differently from Steven Radicevich.
So, the biggest difference is you have Steven is the point man for free agency. He's the tip of the spear there. And Mike is the point man for the draft. Now, they all do everything together. So, I mean, Mike's involved in free agency. Steve is involved in the draft. They're all hands on deck in the draft. It's the nature of their department. They're the smallest scouting staff. Everybody knows all that. But that they right. do that because they want everything to feel interconnected in terms of the coaches, in terms of free agency plan, in terms of draft plan, in terms of what they're looking for. Very cohesive that way. So everybody has a hand in all of it. It's just a matter of who's kind of the leading voice presenting to Duke in different parts. And with free agency, that's Steven. And with the draft, that's Mike.
Yeah. And when you did this piece and you broke down each draft pick and the perspective, what was like the impetus for the story, Paul? Go ahead.
Yeah, I love doing this. I these guys, you know, and girls across the league, I mean, they work endlessly, tirelessly all year long, and they have so many stories about these players that they learn about and from talking to people at all these schools, and they have to hold them like little secrets, you know, forever. And so once they get drafted, they're like, "Let me tell you why we were sold on them. Why is there excitement?" Most of these guys, I mean, they end up here for a reason, not because it's like, well, he's next in line. It's because they probably had him graded a little higher than others for some reason. And it's usually some of these details that these scouts uncover with their sources that they trust or whatever, with something within the schools. And so I love finding out what those details were. Why did they have this player a tick higher than most other people, whether it be a round grade or a part inside of a round? And you get all that, you know, you get stories like hearing about what they saw when they went to a practice visit at Iowa and saw Eric all dominating there. And then afterwards listening to the coaches talk about him in the exact same vein as Laporta and Kittle and how that resonated. It's like you see the type of player when they talk about, you know, ball lovers and type Bengal types that you've seen succeed here in the past.
Right.
You find that by seeing that stuff in practices around the building from the strength coach. And those stories that they tell about these players is a part of why they were sold to them. that's where you learn. That's where you learn why they like them and who they are.
You know, at this, I guess, anytime you talk about drafting a player or bringing a player in, one of the cautionary tales, Paul Daner Jr., is, quote unquote, falling in love with a player. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Bengals and their scouting department do a good job of not falling in love with a player, but being at this point, they're able to really discern between their qualities and some of the drawbacks and trying to be aware and put all of that into one complete composite picture?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, you have traits that you lean into and that you prioritize that you feel like produce successful pros that get the most out of the talent that they see. And where does that compare to who is the most talented player on the tape? You know, I talked to Trey Brown the week before the draft, an executive with the Bengals, and he was talking about how the biggest thing this time of year that is his message is keep the tape at the forefront. Like, don't lose sight of the tape. It's been so long. You've been through this process of interviews and combine and Mobile and everything else. Don't lose sight of your original football playing tape grade. It's just so different, and you've got to hold that to the highest. And then talking to Christian Sarkisian, a scout for this, he said, you know, three of the guys he was specifically in his area, he said that one thing that was notable for me was through every part of the process, I held the same grade as I did from the tape. The tape held, it never moved. Whereas in the past, he's moved guys up or down that they've taken that after the season ended due to this or that. He's like, this held. They just kept checking boxes. They kept verifying the tape grade, kept verifying what I knew about them over and over again. And those are guys that you love to draft because you feel like they have just always shown that they're worth what you thought they were, and then put that value on them by round and take them. And so that's what a lot of their, you know, I think their late picks in this draft ended up being, was guys that just kept ticking the box at every turn of, you know, the types of people and players that they like to try to believe in to get more out of their potential than other people think that they can. And, you know, the key to any day three pick, really.
One of the things I loved about your article was this. You're right. This was the most tempting moment in terms of a move, because Bengals didn't make any moves, as we all know, all draft, which is remarkable considering there were 10 picks and an abundance of options throughout the 3 days. You quote Mike Potts here. There were definitely conversations we had moving up in the second round, and really every round, moving up, moving back. There were probably over 100, if I had to guess, phone calls, texts about trades, but the way it worked out, we did a really good job staying patient. There were at least one or two guys where we feel like we didn't feel like we were dropping down a level of player. I love that quote for this reason. People wondered why the Bengals did with 10 picks, didn't make any moves. That pretty much explains it. And the whole point of doing a really good job staying patient, to me, that's the Bengals' MO.
Yeah. I mean, they're not, you know, traitors. They're not out here trying to, you know, move up and down and around. What they love is competition. They want more swings. And we have talked about this often. You know, the one problem, you know, whether you're talking about analytics or people that have just been in this game forever and understand the draft, the one problem you can have is thinking you're a better drafter than anybody else in the league. You're not. Nobody is. It is human nature game. It is a roll of the dice at every single pick, including from one all the way down to Mr. Irrelevant. And the people that that get the most swings, that acquire the most swings and the most value at them, are usually the ones that end up winning drafts, because nobody is going to necessarily be out here perfectly pinpointing the right player at the right spot. And so they want to get value. If they feel like they're going to drop down a tier, they will move up. They did. Cam Taylor-Britt was the example of them doing that. If they feel like they're not, they've done that in middle rounds before. But if they can know that they're going to get somebody from their tier that they want here, they're not going to move. And the only thing they would do maybe is move back to get more picks. Yeah, you look at a roster that's full, And then you add 10 guys and say, what the hell are you guys doing? Where are these guys going to go? They'll say, talk to us in October, talk to us in January, and let me know what the roster looks like then, because the war of attrition is significant and you always want to have competition. And not just because you have that guy to go to, but you made the guy in front of them better because you lit a fire behind them. You put pressure on everybody at every position. Hey, there's a pick coming in behind you. Be ready. And so the more that they can do of that, that's almost a worthwhile side effect of those 4th, 6th, and 7th round picks than the actual production you'll get from the 6th and 7th round picks. Take Matt Lee behind Trey Hill. Maybe Matt Lee's good. Maybe Matt Lee gets something that you haven't gotten out of Trey Hill for 3 years. Like, I don't know, but having those and just spreading those across your roster ends up being a good thing in the long run. And that is a big part of their philosophy. More swings, more competition, more pressure on everyone.
I thought Charlie Goldsmith had a terrific question of Zach during the wrap-up presser, I think it was, for the draft, when he asked, is this the year where, you know, I think it's their third year in the NFL, where the backup offensive linemen have to start stepping up? Guys like Deontay Smith, Jackson Carman, who we've been talking about, it seems like, interminably for the last couple of seasons. Guys like that, they have to, and Trey Hill, they have to start stepping up, proving their worth to the roster.
Yeah, or they'll be off it. I mean, they're in the contract years. I mean, those are guys that haven't done anything here, have disappointed, yeah, been basically busts, 3 busts of an offensive line class, and now they're there as your options for your depth pieces up front. And so, you know, it's either now or never. I mean, you either show up and do something or you will be on the street soon, because there's other guys that have been brought in, and you can't just sit here and be a non-producer for this long. You'll be on the street now and probably forever. It's kind of a last chance for those guys.
Anything pique your interest this week, either with regard to the Bengals starting their on-field work on Tuesday, or the rookies reporting essentially for an orientation program on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious would be what we opened with. Well, correct. What? Not what you opened with, but what we with. Not the Brady roast, of course.
And you just completed your roast of trash. Yeah.
No, I mean, the obvious would be, let's see what Burrow looks like throwing. I mean, it's always going to be interesting. He's out there for the first time in front of us. Assuming that happens. Right. But outside of that, you know, I'm intrigued as to, you know, get to know a little bit more about the undrafted free agents when they come in, and who some of those guys are, and any roles that they could play. I guess we'll meet a punter, right? We'll get some.
Yeah, can the IEL structure, not the bubble, the structure, handle a 94-yard punt from you know what I've been doing the last couple of minutes? I've been rummaging through my folders where I put the current Bengals depth list, including the unsigned rookie free agents that will be part of this class, and I can't find it. So
it's okay. But no, you're talking about maybe a new punter. You're talking about a few play. I'm interested to meet them, but I don't know that, you know, there's anything. The schedule is maybe going to come out this week, which I'm very interested to see. I get excited about that. I like seeing where we're going. I like knowing I like to see if there's any road trips that are, you know, they grow in importance, whether it be there's some other event going on there that weekend, or we can pair up with like a UC game or some other big college football game that's there on Saturday. I mean, you I believe did Arizona State, right, last year? Or Colorado at Arizona State, right?
So Arizona State to see Deion Sanders and Marvin Lewis, who was
on that's the right. Line so if you get stuff like that every year, I'm always excited to see where that's going to be. Will they be the Thursday night opener against the Chiefs? They're certainly on a short list to find that out. That will add a ton of spice to the open of the season. And so I get excited for the schedule release. It's one of my favorite days. And so that's probably the most exciting part of the week. That even tops whatever we're going to see from Joseph Lee Burrow this week.
Yeah, and by the way, some bookkeeping business here, Paul Daner Jr. It's Austin McNamara out of Texas Tech. He's the guy I was trying to think of, and I couldn't.
Very exciting to have a new punter in the house. I know everybody's on pins and needles.
Anybody else, by the way, while we're on the subject, stick out to you in terms of college free agents?
Well, you know, honestly, I haven't gone too deep on them for a reason. I don't like to do it until they actually get in here because I've just seen this too often where guys come and also you're like, where's that guy? Oh, he didn't pass his physical or he ended up not coming. Or the class changes sometimes from what is originally reported to end of the end. So I know that they're out there and I've certainly like perused the list and looked into who they are. And talk to some of the scouts about some of the guys that they're expecting. But I don't like to fully go in until we get that official list just because I've kind of been caught red-handed on that before a few times where it ends up not being who you think it would be.
Well, I want to thank you again, Paul. You do a tremendous job on The Athletic. I can't think of any other superlatives at this moment, so I'll just say you
it's
do
okay. It. It's okay. I mean, it's fine. I just, you know, I just look forward. I'm gonna go back now and rewatch the roast so that we can have more to talk about the Patriots and Bob Kraft and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and Vrabes was there. I saw and all the luminaries of your past. I'm actually surprised you didn't get a shout out. I would have assumed that you would have gotten a reference at some point.
Some people being tested after we finish up this podcast, by the way.
I'm just saying, like, it's out of anger. You should have been making. I'm surprised you weren't asked to be on the dais, Trax, you know, to considering, you know, your history.
Well, he's Paul Daner Jr. Please do check out Bengals Scouts Reveal Details about Cincinnati's 2024 NFL draft class on The Athletic. It is a worthwhile read. I love having you on, Paul Daner Jr. You are the best.
Thank you,
all right. He is Paul Daner Jr. Thank him once again for appearing on this episode of the Jungle Roar podcast, which, as always, is powered by CLNS Media and our fine friends at Prize Picks and Game Time. Until next week, keep that jungle roaring.